Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, July 13th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we got a little bit of a gift today from gold, and struggled, but it really had a big dip. Very early on, I'm looking at that to see if that's correct. That's got to be a typo. I rarely watch the lows of the day, but we're looking at gold 1344 up 10. Silver was up 22 cents at 2044. Platinum was up 5 at 1100. Palladium was up 18 at 648. And if these numbers are correct, you're looking at a low of gold at 1190, and it reversed back to 1344. That's an incredible rebound.
So that's true. I'm looking at the chart for 24 hours, and nothing like that shows up on the chart. That's a misprint, I think.
Well, they even
I'm looking at the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th on the chart they have here, and everything is in the vicinity of 1340.
So
the lowest I can see.
Technology, ain't it grand?
Well,
but anyway,
it is a government statistic.
Yeah. Anyway, USDX today was down 0.20 at 96.31. Crude oil tumbled again 1.80 to the downside at $45. You have the paper markets. The Dow was up 24 points, 18,371. The Nasdaq was down 17 at 5,005. S&P basically unchanged at 2152. 10-year yield 1.47%. Euro 111. European markets were down. And, If you read some of these commentaries from these Wall Streeters and some of these other folks who have new newsletters and so forth, I mean, they're predicting Dow 20, 30, 50,000 on the Dow. And it's like, okay, it's the end. They're predicting 50,000 and the newsletters are actually, people are supporting that number. You have to be insane. But anyway,
it's like a circus, Melody. They're coming to see
Carnival
the
Barker's du
lady
jour.
The two-headed man.
Carnival Barker's du jour. They're everywhere. Anyway, Wendy Wilson is not a carnival barker. She tells us all about her health, how to stay healthy. This is Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al. How's everybody?
Hello, Wendy.
You're going to talk about gallbladders.
Yeah, know anybody in your family, maybe a friend who's had gallbladder problems? It's pretty
everywhere.
Prevalent. Okay.
It's just common practice anymore, it seems.
Well, according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institute of Health, gallbladder disease is very common. You're correct, Melody. And it's a very lucrative business for modern medicine. They net $5 billion a year in treating gallbladder disorders. Now, some of the reasons people have gallbladder disease, according to medicine, is due to obesity and metabolic syndrome, usually lifestyle issues. And adolescents now developing gallbladder disease when it once was considered quite rare. Also, gallbladder cancer is also prevalent and on the rise. You want to say something
else? I was wondering, what are the symptoms?
We'll get to those in just a minute. common problem, though, in the United States, 20% of the U.S. population, 1 million people are diagnosed annually with gallbladder disease. So we're going to see what the risks are, how we can avoid it, and so forth and so on. But real quickly, it's not just a U.S. problem. It's a global problem. Gallbladder disease is on the rise in the United States, Chile, Sweden, Germany, and Austria. And this is how you know it's linked to lifestyle. In Arizona, 70% of the Pima Indian women have gallstones by the age of 30, and it's all on how they live. Also, there's no gallbladder disease among Asians and zero gallbladder disease among East African, the Mazi people. And more women seem to get gallbladder disease than men. Average age is 54. And Al, you asked about the symptoms. So you don't want to if you get symptoms, you don't want to go untreated. You want to use common sense. But in most cases, when the gallbladder produces symptoms, it's congested. It has a lot, either stones or a bunch of sludge mucus in the gallbladder, and it's hindering the release of the bile. So you need to flush the gallbladder out, and there's a way that we can do that and avoid a problem like surgery. So if you seem to get pain in the upper right side of the abdomen under your rib, and that becomes persistent as the condition worsens. So it'll be intermittent, and then it becomes consistent as you get sicker with this. Also, you could have some back pain between the shoulder blades or shooting pain over the shoulder. You can have a pain under your right shoulder blade. Nausea, vomiting can be a symptom, as well as abdominal bloating, indigestion, gas, belching, sweating and chills, low-grade fever, yellow color to skin and eyes, and clay-colored stool. And the reason that is because the liver and gallbladder are very connected. They work in tandem together. And what happens is a lot of debris and toxins and dead red blood cells get filtered through the liver and go into the gallbladder and are supposed to be deposited into the bowel through the duodenum. So if the gallbladder is congested, it can't receive enough toxins. They can back up into the liver, and the liver can be affected. And this is why you would get a change in stool color. And also your eyes could and your skin could take that yellowy appearance. But, you know, there's surgery. A lot of people say, I don't worry. I don't worry about that. I can just have surgery. Well, in the 1990s, the laparoscopic surgery was the new kid on the block for gallbladder removal. But prior to that, they removed about 600,000 gallbladders a year. But when the laparoscopic technique came on board, the surgeons nicknamed that procedure LAP-CHOLI. It is short for laparoscopic cholecystectomy. Say that three times fast. Anyway, the surgeons consider your gallbladder kind of a expendable organ. So now with the laparoscopic, they dispose of 800,000 gallbladders a year. And according to Dr.
Tell us what you mean by can you tell us what you mean by laparoscopy?
Laparoscopy is they use a very small incision, and the doctor goes in with special tools with a camera on it. And with the tools, they can remove the gallbladder through a very small incision and not the 4-inch incision they have with the traditional gallbladder surgery. So it's supposed to be less invasive. It's supposed to, quicken the recovery and so forth and so on, less they say, less risk. But we're going to get to the risks anyway in a minute. Now, Dr. Pat Bass III says laparoscopic procedures have increased the number of gallbladder removals and increased health care costs. And according to clearhealth.com, let me ask you this, Al. If you had to get your gallbladder removed, can you take a guess what it would cost you?
Well, I'd probably have to get a job as a greeter down at Walmart in order to make the payments, but no, I have no idea.
Well, if you get a laparoscopic or traditional surgery for a gallbladder removal, it tends to run about
$95,000. $95,000?
Oh, yeah. And so just to give you perspective, you're not in the hospital all that long. You're there maybe 12 hours, and the hospital, when they remove your gallbladder, so that would be a cost of $3,700 per hour while you're there. So if you
such a deal.
Oh, I know. Well, if you live in Mesa, Arizona, the gallbladder surgery there is just under $95,000 with insurance. But if you are self-pay, they charge you $14,223 for the same procedure.
So that gives you a good idea of what's really going on with insurance.
Yep, it sure does. Yeah. Now, patients are usually counseled by doctors about the gallbladder surgery, and they're advised that the bile will flow from the liver directly into the bile duct instead of going to the gallbladder once it's removed. No big deal. And the gallbladder would store bile in between your meals, but once that's removed, that's not possible. So doctors are telling patients this will have really no effect on digestion. It'll be a simple laparoscopic procedure to remove the organ, offers a few less downtime, less complications. You'll be back to your old lifestyle within 7 days. Well, gallbladder surgery is basically used to treat gallstones, but even after you remove the organ, you can still develop gallstones in the bile duct. So here are the surgery risks. Patients are told overall the surgery risk is low, and they'll have their lives back afterward. And doctors who are honest, though, will let their patients know that there are risks with every surgery, and gallbladder surgery is no different. Now, the University of Edinburgh, UK, they studied the risks of this particular surgery, and they published their results in the 2012 British Medical Journal. So in the UK, they have the socialized healthcare. And not all the facilities there are equipped to do the surgery, and they don't always do a lot of them, so they're not really that experienced. They remove maybe 60,000 gallbladders a year countrywide there. So the risks are higher for people with heart conditions and older individuals because they tend to have more health problems. And also, you want to watch where the gallbladder procedure is scheduled to make sure they're experienced and have the right facility. So here's the risks. Risk of infection, internal bleeding, injury to the bile duct, injury to your small intestine, anesthesia risks, gallstones that are left in the abdominal cavity, a bile leak into the abdominal cavity, which could be rare, but it could injure blood vessels that lead to the heart and liver, and also injury to the liver itself by an unintended cut. So let me read you real quick, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time. Let me read you some of the information that are coming from patients who have had the experience, because, you know, when you don't have your gallbladder, you don't have that bile to digest fats. So when you eat fatty foods, usually you're going to come down with digestive discomfort, diarrhea, bloating, nausea, indigestion, and pain. So your diet is severely limited. And by the way, your antioxidants in vegetables are fat soluble. So there's a whole slew of nutrients that you're not going to be able to absorb that are important to nutrition. And you're not going to be able to substitute those with supplement pills because you're not going to be able to digest them either. So here's a quote from over here. This was, where was this at? This was at a web blog for patients with experience after having their gallbladder removed. So people these days, you know, like to post their experience, Melanie, Al, online. Oh, yeah, this was at patient.info blog. This is a patient by the name of Kay. She says this: I had my gallbladder removed 7 weeks ago. I had a laparoscopic removal, but I was in so much pain they had to give me an epidural. Since the operation, I've had pain. I feel sick. I can't eat. I experience excruciating pain for up to an hour after I eat something, and if I lie down in the same position for too long and then stand up, it brings the pain on too. And she says, I have a bile taste in my mouth, excessive sweating, and fatigue. I experience this several times a day, and now I'm told I'm going to have to get a stent put in my bile duct. Since the operation, my life is a complete mess, end of quote. Well, notice she has a lot of the symptoms that she had prior to her surgery, you know?
Do people tend to gain weight after a gallbladder operation?
I don't know if they've gained weight. I haven't seen that as a complaint. A lot of people are put on, you know, fat restricted diets. Like, for instance, I know somebody in my family in particular had their gallbladder removed and then found out she can't put that Carnation Instant Creamer in her coffee because it's a lot of fat and you know, gave her a lot of discomfort. But there's another reason people have gallbladder failure, and it's due to prescription drugs, and doctors don't really tell you about that. So here's a brief list of the drugs. One is an antibiotic called Rocephin. It's usually given for pneumonia, ear infections, skin infections, urinary tract infections, gonorrhea, pelvic infections, sepsis, bone and joint infections, abdominal infections, and meningitis. It has an effect. It damages the biliary duct, and it creates a sludge buildup and gallstones in the gallbladder itself. So that's an antibiotic that does that. Another drug is an injectable hormone blocker. They usually give it for people with tumors or if they have conditions of watery diarrhea. It's called octreotide, and a negative effect also on the gallbladder, the liver, the stomach, cardio, and pulmonary systems. One is a hypertension congestive heart failure drug called thiazide diuretics. They cause liver dysfunction and gallbladder dysfunction. And lastly, if you're ever in a long-term facility and you're getting nutrition through an IV and you have that longer than 6 weeks, you have 100% risk of gallbladder sludge and stone buildup in that organ. So FYI. So
is there any way to heal this and avoid the operation?
Oh, yeah. I tell people all the time they're more powerful than they think if they just, you know, manage that lifestyle, you know, watch what they're eating and drinking, because a lot of those gallstones come from calcium and cholesterol and things like that. So watch the diet. And also there's some foods that can help stop the spasming of the gallbladder and the pain. And you can get an ultrasound to see if you've got any stones and how big they are. If they're smaller than a garbanzo bean, it's most likely you'll be able to flush them out. And we show people how to do that with an herbal gallbladder flush. And they can do that at home. If they have any elongated stones blocking the duct, I don't recommend they do that. They'll have to have that treated by a physician. They can usually break up the stones with an ultrasound. So there's lots they can do, but we do have a gallbladder liver flush kit. We have a step down cleanse if you don't have stones, but you want to tone and regenerate those organs. We have a liver detox tea that's very tasty, has a lot of cinnamon in it. So people have tools. They just need to use them.
Well, when we're talking about flushing, are we talking about flushing after you're aware that you have the problem, or are we talking about flushing as a preventive? Where just a good
both.
Idea to try this every once in a while to prevent the problem from turning up.
You could use these herbs as a maintenance, as a prevention, obviously, yes. And you can also use it as a flush. Like I said, it's a gallbladder flush that's been done for hundreds of years. I've seen it done over and over. I take it at least twice a year just to make sure I don't have any stones building up in that gallbladder. And it's quite easy and effective. So people can contact us at Apothecary Herbs for more information. The number's toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit us on the website, thepowerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy. Very informative. Look forward to talking to you next week. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, over in England, Cameron is history. He's no longer there. The new prime minister takes over, and the Bank of England will decide. They decide today and make the announcement tomorrow what they're going to do with their rates. And, of course, I think we see it in some of the rising prices in the shares and so forth that certainly they're not going to do anything to upset the market. So rates will either stay the same or go down if they have any more room to go down. But that'll be announced tomorrow, so we could see, you know, shares reacting to that tomorrow.
Got an article from Business Insider. Very interesting article. And the headline is, "The economy is adding jobs, but the divide between the haves and have-nots is bigger than ever." And they say there's a new 99%. A new report from Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce says that 11.5 million of the 11.6 million jobs created in the United States during the post-2008 recovery went to workers with at least some college education. 11.5 million out of 11.6 million is 99%. Moreover, 73% were it went to workers with a bachelor's degree or higher. Now, this is important. This is an important insight from my perspective for this reason. We have people that are concerned about black-white relationships, race relationships in this country. And people in the African-American community are concerned because they're not getting jobs. And they feel that they're discriminated against. And on one level, they are correct, but it's not because they're Negroes. It's because many of them don't have college educations. And this report is saying that 99% of the jobs created since 2008 have gone to people who had at least some college education. And if the implication of the article, as you get deeper into it, is if you don't have any college education, you're in a lot of trouble. The world is changing in a way where that college education becomes necessary to find employment. It says, according to the Wall Street Journal, that makes this year the first time in which college-educated workers outnumber those with high school diplomas or less. College-educated workers, those with a bachelor's degree, now make up 36% of the workforce, and those with a high school diploma or less drop to 34%, down 5 percentage points from 2007. All right, people who have a high school education or lower have 5% less jobs than they had in 2007, 9 years ago. This is a significant number. The other 30% of workers are those with an associate's degree or some college education. Georgetown report said jobs are back, but they're not the same jobs lost during the recession. The Great Recession decimated low-skill, blue-collar, and clerical jobs, whereas the recovery added primarily high-skill, managerial, and professional jobs. Jobs filled by people with high school education fell by less than a high school education or less, fell by 5.6 million. From December 2007 to January 2010, and just 80,000 have since been added. Now, again, the lesson in this is you have to, if you want to get a job these days, odds are you need a college education or at least a couple of years of college. High school education is not enough to assume you will be employed after you get out of high school. You know, there was a time when if you had a high school education, you were deemed to be fit to have most jobs. All right? You could get clerical jobs, you could get construction jobs, you could get this, that, or the other. No longer true.
Yeah, but you know why, Al? You really want to know why? Because of the education. What do they teach these kids in high school anyway?
Well, no, I understand.
They can barely tie their shoes when they get out of high school. So yeah, they're not going to qualify for anything. You do have to go to college for a little bit to get something. You know?
Yeah, if you have any capacity for education at all, apparently you have to demonstrate it after you get out of high school. Not then high school.
So
after you get out of high school, you have to go to college to prove that you're actually.
So not only do they dumb them down so much they can't even get a job. Not only do they ship the jobs overseas so there's nothing for them to work, they dumb them down to the point where they can't get a job.
No, I understand. And, you know, it's unnecessary. I published an article back, in the early 90s, 20 years ago now, published an article on we found a copy of a high school final exam. And I think it was from Nebraska. It goes back to about 1905, early 1900s. And I don't remember how long it was altogether, a couple pages long. And they had problems in mathematics and questions on geography and politics, and it was extensive. And I will guarantee you that most people graduating from college today couldn't have passed that high school graduation exam from back around 1905. They were teaching kids. They were teaching them. They were equipping them. And nowadays, they say, oh, we have to worry about their self-esteem, and we need transgender bathrooms. Anything other than actually educating these children. Well,
and
trouble. This is a source of trouble.
But the problem, Al, is when you look to China, when you look to all of these, India, education is very important to them. China, if you're caught cheating, you're subject to 14 years in prison. If you're caught cheating on tests in school, at the college level, I believe.
That deprives people of their natural creativity, Melody.
You have people in Italy. When I was in Italy, you know, the children have knowledge of three languages before they get into the first grade.
Yeah.
They're taught German, English, and then their home language. In Italy, it was Italian. So, I mean, heck, now the only thing our kids can do. Text.
Well, they know how to make each other pregnant.
Text.
They know how to text, and they know how to make each other pregnant. All right.
Well, even that's fallen to some degree, but they know how to text. So it is a sad, and I think this report really reflects, you know, how the children are coming out of school.
I understand it. Children are being, they said, no child left behind. That was the Bush formula or slogan for the education system while George G.W. was in office. And it always struck me as when they're playing No Child Left Behind, it ultimately means no child gets ahead. They're going to make sure that everybody comes in at the same point, at the end of the race in high school. You have to let people accelerate if they can. You have to encourage them to do it. And I always had the idea, they're trying to homogenize everyone, and it's bad for all of us. And perhaps what we're seeing in this report is evidence of that. You know, government doesn't need to be in the education system. The truth of the matter is you could get a good education on Skid Row. There are people on Skid Row who are capable. They know how to teach mathematics. They know how to teach geography. You have to dry them out. I'm not arguing we should be hiring drunks and rest, that sort of thing, and bums. But what I'm trying to communicate is there are people in your neighborhood who are capable of teaching classes. And I'm not saying college-level classes, but certainly first grade, grade school classes. The point I'm trying to get to, we don't need all of these monster schools. You can get by in a limited environment where one woman in the neighborhood teaches the kids in the neighborhood mathematics, and another one teaches them English, and somebody else teaches them whatever else needs to be done. Now, I know this isn't, I'm not dead serious about what I'm talking about here, but there is something wrong with the educational structure in this country, the institution. It's about something, but it's not about education. Because we've gone from one of the best educational systems in the world to the last time I heard, we're like number 17 in the world. And the solution to the problem is we need to pay the teachers more money and the administrators more money. And we don't have to worry about teaching the children. We just need to pay them more money. And somehow that'll correct the problem. I think what needs to be done is you need to walk away from these institutions. And we see evidence of this with people that get into homeschooling. It can be done. The point I wanted to make when I was talking about that Nebraska final exam from 1905, you know, when I think about it, it wasn't even a high school exam. It was an eighth grade exam. I haven't looked at that or thought about it in a considerable period of time. But the point behind this is that children are far more capable of learning than we give them credit for. We can teach these kids. All right, it might mean you've got to get back and reading, writing, and arithmetic taught to the tune of the hickory stick. All right, maybe you got to break out the hickory sticks and keep the little monsters under control. But when they get out of eighth grade, get out of high school, they have an education, and they are capable of making a contribution to society and capable of supporting themselves. Now they're capable of filling out welfare applications. This is evidence of a serious problem, and the solution, it won't be instantaneous, and I'm not sure how we're gonna deal with this, but something's got to be done about the American education system. And one way or another, we've got to improve our education system, public education system, through high school.
Through college.
Well, colleges are...
You know what? I've...
But you got to get those kids in high school, have got to be one way or another. They've got to be challenged to learn, forced to learn. They've got to do it.
I've been told by a credible source that deals with college students, they don't even know how to write their name cursive. And that's a fact. And that's true.
Can't read a clock.
They have to ask. They have to ask their parents how to sign their name to get passports. This is Penn State, not just some, you know, little university that's, you know, a community university. And some of your community universities are excelling at what they're producing as far as their students. But and that's a fact. And it's just not one. It was several. And so even the students coming out of college after the amount of tuition that they pay, no wonder they want to have free tuition. And that's a sad fact. And it's common. It's just not a rare case. It's common. So.
Well, and it's a problem. You know, how we're going to deal with that problem, I don't know exactly. But one way or another, someone needs to take over the American educational system, and particularly the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, assuming that's still a valid department. I'm not even sure if the education department is still, education is still a part of that, or they've divided up or whatever. But still at the federal level, someone needs to take it over, and they need to actually make it their business. You will educate the children. You have, I'm going to give you a semester, maybe two, to turn the education system around in this country. That it's got to start all the way down in first grade, kindergarten. Got to start someplace early, and it has to manifest. And these kids have to be brought in and learn and taught reading, writing, and arithmetic. All right, fundamentals. And you don't have to worry about their self-esteem. And you don't have to worry about whether you're going to hurt their feelings if you tell them that, look, you need to work harder to actually learn this stuff. Or we're going to give you this, we're going to send you the principal, and he's going to smack you. You understand? He'll pull out the paddle, and you're not going to like it. And we've become so liberal, and we've become so, I don't know, just it's we have become weak in our attempt to take care of children and worry about their little psychological problems. You can't do it.
They have more right? now.
I don't
they
doubt
have more,
that they have psychological
they
problems.
Have more they have more psychological problems now than they have in the past. But, I mean, that's another topic and another discussion. But.
Yeah, it's not easy being a kid and rest, that sort of thing. But just the same, it is in everyone's interest, including the child, that they get an adequate education, and it's not being delivered, and people are being overpaid, people are being demanding more payment, and the number of administrators relative to teachers is unreasonable, and something's got to be done here. And if we don't, as I said, we've got a bunch of people, African-Americans, who think they're being discriminated against because they can't get jobs and support themselves. The problem is not that they're black. The problem is not that they're Negro.
Not.
The problem is that they don't have the proper education. That's the point here. And we have people that are ready to shoot police officers believing they've been discriminated against because they're Negroes, when in fact the discrimination, and I know they're complaining about what's happening in their relationship to the police, but I'm saying that the an underlying source for anger in the black community is their inability to find adequate employment.
It's an underlying anger.
And it goes to education.
It's an underlying anger across all people because it's difficult to get jobs when so many of them were lost. And I mean, it was that one time. I mean, if you dropped out of school when you were, you know, 16, 17, there was something that you could do. There was a job there that you could do.
Well,
and those have all been shipped away. They have all been shipped away. They have all been replaced by technology. Those clerical work, they've all been closed down. So it even makes it more difficult.
There's no doubt about it, but still it has to be addressed. It has to be resolved. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, yesterday when we had Doug Nolan on the program, we talked about bubbles. And we talked about financial bubbles. And we've had the stock markets reaching, you know, record highs. And here's why. Records, again, reached this week by the major U.S. stocks indices. And again, the corporate share buyback. Tuesday, the Dow surged 121 points. It's the first record close since May of 2015. The S&P 500, it notched its second record close in 2 days. And what is the most prominent driver of these stock rallies? It's been companies' willingness to buy back shares. Nobody else wants them. People are pulling their money up, but they continue to buy back their shares. They're not taking the money they have and reinvesting it so, you know, perhaps they can grow their companies and find new markets and maybe create new jobs. No, they're buying back their shares. That money is going back. The strategy has been embraced by firms and some investors, and we all know why. It drives up share prices and it improves per share earnings by reducing the number of shares outstanding.
Which means the executives get bonuses.
They get bonuses and they get wealthy, yes.
But they haven't actually made the corporation more profitable.
Not at all.
They haven't made it more productive. They may have made it more profitable on a temporary basis, on an accounting basis.
Fuzzy math.
They haven't made it more productive, and that's where their pay should be. Their pay should be tied to productivity, not just accounting. One other point. When they're buying this stock back, typically they're buying it back with money they've borrowed.
Correct.
They're not even buying it back out of their
cash.
Own. out of their own saved treasury. They're borrowing the money because interest rates are so low. So what is such a deal?
They use other people's money.
I don't know. What will we do it? Well, we could buy the stock, you know. And they say, well, I don't know. You think it's worth? Well, yeah. What the heck? Let's, you know, let's take a chance and buy back the stock, and we can get the investors, the shareholders will go along with giving us a big bonus. Everybody says, yay, yay. That's what economics is all about.
Other people's money, that's why they borrow. And companies in the S&P bought back $161 billion of shares during the first 3 months of the year. This is the second biggest quarter for repurchases ever. So again, folks, you know, just another illusion that things are doing great. Another company spent the most in the first quarter, $8 billion, Apple. They executed $6.7 billion of repurchases. And, you know, of course, we know Apple is a member of the Dow. So, again, it's just incredible the amount of money that's being pushed into these markets. And, again, we're seeing the results of all-time highs. And it comes back to bubbles. There's nothing underlying the rise in the price of these shares. Mm-hmm. It's hot air that's pushing it up. And again, it is one of the, you know, it's one of the things that creates the bubbles. And again, this is a bubble, and it will break, and it will drop significantly. It's being supported by, it's not being supported by anything stable. And it's not being supported by, you know, what makes a company strong, and just a bunch of hot air that you get out of Wall Street, and also Washington.
If you're running an organization, if you're running a business, if you're going to invest money on behalf of that business that is borrowed in particular, or even taken out of the treasury, there's a bunch of things that you could invest the money in. There's always options. But the first thing you should be looking for is something that will increase the corporation's productivity. Maybe a new machine that'll make 100 widgets an hour rather than 50 widgets an hour. Right? Something that increases productivity, and therefore you get an economic return on your investment in that machine or technology or whatever it is that increases productivity. But when you're investing your money in just accounting gimmicks that make it appear that you're becoming more profitable, it's a kind of fraud. It's not real. It's irresponsible. It may help the executives to get a good bonus, maybe even a pay raise, but it puts the corporation in line for some sort of a correction in the foreseeable future, where people are going to say, "Oh my gosh, what happened? Where did we get wrong? Where did we go wrong?" Well, maybe you went wrong buying your own stock rather than buying a new machine. I've, from my perspective, as a general rule, you don't want to be borrowing money unless it's the money is being spent on something that will become productive. Right? Don't want to be going into debt for non-productive reasons. But a lot of people are doing it. A lot of businesses are doing it. A lot of corporations are doing it. And I'm just saying, sooner or later, that's going to come back to bite everybody. So here's an article from Yahoo Finance. It says, and this is just the article is interesting to me mostly because of the headline. And the headline is, "This economist thinks China is headed for a 1929-style depression." The provocative Andy G. Was a top economist at the World Bank and Morgan Stanley. Today, he's among the loudest voices warning of an inevitable implosion in China, the world's second largest economy. In a recent interview with MarketWatch, Andy Ji said, "China's trajectory instead resembles the one that led to the Great Depression, when the expansion of credit, loose monetary policy, and a widespread belief that asset prices would never fall contributed to rampant speculation that ended with a crippling market crash." Now, what cracks me up about this is here we have Andy G saying, "Oh, China's going into a Great Depression." Well, yeah, but right now, it's arguable that the whole world, or at least much of the world right now, if we can believe the Baltic Dry Index, we're already in a depression. It may not be apparent here in the United States, but it's increasingly apparent around the world, the amount of global trade. Again, 12,000 back a couple of years ago on the Baltic Dry Index. That was their scale was up over 12,000. Today, it's down below 500. I mean, that's a spectacular. It means that globally, we are in or very near a depression. I don't see how you can argue we're not already in a global depression, although it doesn't show up equally everywhere. It hasn't yet shown up here in the United States. And when Mr. Xi says, oh, China's headed for a 1929-style depression, yeah, and so is Barbados, right? And Venezuela's already there. Argentina's headed there. Panama's going, and so are we in the United States. It doesn't take a PhD, it doesn't take a background from the World Bank and Morgan Stanley to make these predictions, in my opinion. You can look around and say, look, the whole world is going to suffer this kind of problem, and China's going to be one of the countries that gets to it, and so will Japan, so will the United States. We may be the last ones to succumb. But we're still headed in that direction. And again, the Great Depression, they're talking about the expansion of credit. Well, what was Melody just talking about with corporations buying back stock? Talking about an expansion of credit, cheap money, and the corporations say, why not? Let's sign up. They're giving the money away, and we can buy back some of our stock. We are having an expansion of credit. Loose monetary policy. You could also say quantitative easing. It's going on around the world. And the widespread belief that asset prices would never fall contributed to rampant speculation that ended with a crippling market crash, and they're talking about the Great Depression. What about this widespread belief that assets would never fall? This is part of what is instilled by institutions like the Plunge Protection Team, established by Ronald Reagan, to make sure that the markets didn't fall dramatically. They set up mechanisms where, oh my gosh, the Dow Jones, I don't know what the numbers are. I don't know where the breaking point is. The Dow Jones fell 500 points, 800 points. Mechanisms kick in to stop it from falling further. When so far as the Federal Reserve's strategies over the last several years have been seen by many as essentially guaranteeing that the stocks are going to stay up. Well, some people have this idea, this widespread belief that asset prices would never fall. And it's already happened. They did fall back 2008 and so on. And some people are there sitting there now. What did Melody say? Some people are predicting the Dow is going to 50,000. This is consistent with the same sort of belief, this widespread belief that asset prices are guaranteed to go up and they're never going down. And this is one of the points that Mr. G, he said, contributed to the Great Depression. Expansion of credit, loose monetary policy, widespread belief that asset prices would never fall. And it all contributed to speculation, right? Investing in riskier and riskier stocks. Why are they doing that, Melody? It's because interest rates are so low that if you want a return on your investment, you've got to assume additional risk. And we're doing that. I mean, we're back in this again, and it's happening on a global basis. And it's just a question of time. You can sit here and hope this doesn't happen, but from my perspective, I hope it doesn't happen this month, next month. I'd rather postpone it as long as possible, but it seems inevitable to me that we're going to see something similar to the Great Depression, and we're going to see it on a global basis.
So. You were talking about the depression. This gentleman was talking about in China, again, from yesterday's program, and one of the biggest concerns was China. And today you have China's zombie companies. You have these huge companies that are defaulting on their bond payments, and they're not doing anything about it. It's just business as usual. You know, they haven't been restructured. This one company, Dongbei Special Steel Group, we know that China is flooding the markets with steel. That's one of the big problems. The U.S. did raise tariffs on steel from China, but this company, they defaulted on a bond payment in spring. And 3 months later, nothing. The steel mill has missed five more payments on its $6 billion in debt, but they have yet to formally file for the equivalent of a bankruptcy protection or any type of quote-unquote restructuring of its operations. And that's just one company. So, you know, yeah, China has some big problems with these corporations. I mean, they're just defaulting, and you don't hear anybody really. It doesn't seem like it's having any sorts of impact. Their stock market is getting close to their old highs, you know, so maybe China will start making record highs on their stock market again, the Shanghai. So, It truly is amazing how you see some of these things that transpire, and it's like it just doesn't matter. We're talking billions and billions of dollars.
It matters,
but it's nothing to the—
not to panic their domestic investors.
China's
those corporations aren't private in the same sense they are here in the United States. Yeah, they're
government.
The government doesn't want to admit that the stuff is hitting the fan, and they can't pay their bills. When we say that corporations can't pay the bills, it's like saying our bureaucracy can't pay the bills, which is equivalent to saying the government's broke.
China's sitting on the world's largest pile of corporate debt as a percentage of GDP. They got about $1.3 trillion coming due in the second half of this year. And where do you think that's going to— how do you think that's going to affect the markets if a lot of that's going to default? You know, $24 billion is among the most toxic, but, you know, and most of that is run by that Dongbei steel mill. So, again, you know, and in the IMF, they're coming out and they're warning that there's going to be a huge shock. So, we have an interesting year, Al.
It's been interesting so far.
It's
going to get more interesting. And not only that, it's accelerating. I mean, the problems that we see, you can find enough news in one day to do a week's worth of programs. And there's going to be another mass of news, interesting information. And we pick and choose, you know, to give what we can in the time we have. But still, it moves faster and faster and faster. And this thing, you know, you look at it and you just say, look, this is going to blow up. I mean, it's like watching the fuse, that's burning and headed toward the stack of dynamite or something. It's one of those things where you say, oh, my gosh, I think something serious is going to happen. What else is going to happen is we're going out of time, so we're going to have to say goodbye. We want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.